From Birmingham, Alabama, this is ARC Stories Radio. The stories you're about to hear are true, personal, and told by the people who live them in front of a live audience at one of our ARC Stories events.
So there I was, thinking about what life choices I had made that had led me to this moment of standing in front of a group of strangers attending a football game, being cursed out about Doritos.
I'm Taylor Robinson, and today we have three stories about the impact other people can have on our lives. Some for good, others not so much.
I caught just enough of the video to see a very large man making this slow walk toward a van, wearing absolutely nothing but his underwear and coated in grease.
We created ARC Stories to give Birmingham a place to tell its stories to the world. So coming up, after the news, Birmingham's own true stories. Welcome to ARC Stories Radio. I'm Taylor Robinson, the ARC Stories Director, and I'm joined by my co-host and story coach, Chris Kinsley.
Today we have three stories, each recorded throughout Birmingham at different ARC Stories events. They include one man's encounter with perhaps the world's worst burglar, and another who develops an unlikely friendship with someone whose trust he broke way back when he was just a kid.
But in our first story, one woman overlooks some early warning signs in the pursuit of love. And as you can probably guess, that is never a good strategy. It's from an event we hosted at the Avon Theater where our theme was, So There I Was, stories that begin, So There I Was. Here's storyteller Eunice Elliott.
So there I was, thinking about what life choices I had made that had led me to this moment of standing in front of a group of strangers attending a football game, being cursed out about Doritos. So just to give you a little bit of background on me, I've always been known for making really good choices professionally, but somehow in my romantic choices, I was also the one who had dated a homeless guy for 3 months before I figured it out. You know? In my defense, he was a stylist and he told me he was on tour, so that's why he always had luggage when he came to my house. I'm also the one who dated a car salesman who didn't have a car. But again, I was overwhelmingly known as a person who makes good choices and decisions. Give me a couple of mulligans here and there. So one day I had this bright idea in 2006 to leave my professional pursuits in Atlanta and to move back to Alabama just to be a family member. So part of coming home and being a family member meant I moved into my brother's spare bedroom in Hueytown, Alabama, which was a little different than Atlanta and Miami and Connecticut and Nashville and anything that you do on purpose. But hey, I was with my family, and that was important to me. This is also around the time that I established a MySpace account. So we know where this is going. And so I'm figuring out MySpace, and you're finding friends on MySpace. And so I connected with a gentleman who we just kind of start talking to each other on MySpace. And so he invited me out to meet him for a drink, and that sounded completely safe. This is pre-Craigslist killer, right? And so I met him at his favorite spot, which was Applebee's in Homewood. Now, here's the thing. You know, I dated really high-profile people and celebrities and athletes and actors and coaches and financial advisors, but none of them worked out. So the fact that this guy that I met on MySpace invited me to Applebee's was, in that moment, refreshing. This is nice. So we met at Applebee's. He was taller than me. And so I thought, hey, this could be love. You know, don't really require much. And so we sort of pursued a friendship, and then that kind of turned quickly into something more than a friendship, somewhat of a relationship. He became my moderate to intermediate significant other in a short amount of time. But keep in mind, the alternative to hanging out with him at Applebee's is hanging out in my brother's spare room in Hueytown, Alabama, which wasn't bad. It just wasn't as good as Applebee's because they had alcohol and appetizers. All right. So, you know, when you go into a relationship, you realize you're taking baggage with you in situations. And all of us, if we've ever tried to date, we suffer from some form of PTSD. And his seemed to have been, he was very quick to kind of just go off. You know, he had a very quick trigger. So we could be talking about something that really did not amount to much. And the next thing I would know, he was railing, like just screaming and just upset. And I'm not a person that does that. I don't like to argue. I don't like to fight. I would much rather just forget I ever met you and never see you again in life. And I've been told that that's marriage. You got to just stay there, right? Okay. So the first time this guy went crazy on me, you know, I kind of withdrew for a couple of days. And after a couple of days, I called him and I said, hey, you know, I'm not sure what you're used to, but I'm not really the kind of girl that wants to, you know, it's not really my thing, you know? And he says, you know what? You're right. Me and my ex-girlfriend had this volatile relationship, so I'm just used to trying to defend myself and arguing. You're right. You did not do anything to deserve that. And I said, okay, good. So we've communicated about this. That's not my thing. I don't respond well to a man's voice at a certain pitch. Right? I think a lot of that goes back to my father not being in my life, but let's keep this a light story, okay? So a few weeks go by, we kind of rekindle the magic of our moderate to intermediate romance at Applebee's, and some other random thing comes up, and this guy goes off again. And this time I withdrew for a week. But again, I'm trying. I'm like, there's got to be something to this relationship thing that everybody else is figuring out. So if I've made this grand move to come back to Alabama, come back to Hueytown, I'm going to invest in this dude from MySpace. All right. So after a week of not talking to him, I reached back out to him and I said, hey, so listen, I really don't respond well to that whole yelling and screaming thing. You remember that time I told you that? He's like, you're right. I'm so sorry. I said, well, let's just do this because, you know, let's just communicate. I said, let's do this. So if you ever, like, scream at me again, let's just say we have effectively broken up. But that'll be the breakup. We won't talk about breaking up. That will be the breakup. Okay? That'll be it. We'll be done that day, that moment, that second. Okay? So he agreed. So I said, cool. I'm sure this won't happen again. So I say to this guy, hey, do you want to go to the Magic City Classic? He said, sure. And just so happens, one of my good girlfriends was going to tailgate, which is really the magic of the Magic City Classic, is the tailgating. And so she had gone in with some friends, her and her husband, and they had a tent they had purchased, and they had the space allotted, and a porta potty, and a DJ, and food, and they invited us. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Not only am I invited to a place that has a porta potty, but I actually have a date because I'm chronically single and I actually have a date that's taller than me to come to this event. So along the way of getting to know this guy, you know, there were some things, you know, he was employed. I don't know if it would be gainfully employed. All right. He had a job. He didn't have a car, but you know what? I've had guys have had three cars that didn't like me. So that's not really a big deal. He didn't have a car. And, he didn't have a cell phone, but listen, this is the thing is, see, we could communicate on MySpace, and then the gas was off in his house, and he would warm up his bath water on a hot plate in a pot. But you know what? I think what we should do, we should stay focused on this, because I feel like you guys are judging me more than him. So this is about him and his bad choices, not mine right now. So anyway, I'm excited. I have a date going to the Magic City Classic. So the guy, he worked for Pepsi. That was his job. And his job was, it wasn't like in marketing or, you know, sales. He was the guy that put the Pepsi on the shelves in the store, okay? So I said to him, I said, hey, maybe when you're in one of your stores today, could you just grab some things for us to take to the tailgate? You know, maybe some chips, some soda, some bread, something like that. Because I don't know how it is, you know, in your world, but I have friends that if I show up, and I eat things I didn't bring. They're like, hold up. How many plates she gonna fix? And I didn't want to have that happen. I wanted to come bearing gifts. So he brought two loaves of bread. He brought some plain potato chips, and he brought some sodas. I don't remember, but I'm assuming they were Pepsis out of the back of the truck that he didn't actually pay for. All right. So we go to the tailgate. We're eating. We're drinking. We're dancing to the DJ. We're peeing in the porta potty. We're just having a great time, right? We're having an amazing time. I'm like, this is a successful night for me. I have a date. I'm eating. I'm drinking. I'm at the Magic. This is good. This is why I moved back home, okay? And so the evening is ending, and guys, it's like so many people out here at this event, and so it's just people hanging out, and it's getting dark, and so it's like we're tired, we've had a good time. Yeah, let's call it a night. Okay, great. So as we're walking away from the tailgate, we tell my friends goodbye, thanks for the invitation, had a great night. We're walking, I parked a couple of blocks away, and so we walk into my car, and he says, man, nobody really ate any of the stuff we brought. And I thought, wow, that's wildly unattractive. I said, well, we ate stuff we didn't bring, so it all equals out, you know? So walk a few more steps, and he says, man, like, I don't even have bread at the house. I want to go back and get that bread. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, what does a broke fool say for 600, Alex? That's what he says. I want to go back and get the bread. So at this point, I'm like, wow, this is really happening. But we're still walking towards my car. He didn't go back towards the tent to get the bread. So I'm like, wow, okay, we'll just keep walking. So we're still walking, and then he says, I mean, nobody ate those chips. I was like, at this point, I had to say something. I said, look, you know what? I found my home in somebody's Doritos. So if somebody takes home those potato chips, it's fine. It equals out. It's all good. To which he replied, Doritos ain't chips. I can accept you not having a car, a phone, no hot water in your home. I can accept you questioning, you know, your birth, maybe not even loving your mother, but Doritos ain't chips? What kind of idiot have I been kissing in the mouth? What is happening right now? My gosh. So we're walking, and I really don't even think we're having a real conversation, but when he says Doritos ain't chips, I said, what? I said, yeah, Doritos are chips. They're tortilla chips. Says it on the bag, tortilla chips. So he says, no, they're not chips. And I said, Doritos are chips. We're still walking, but I don't think we're... And he says, no, when someone says chips, they mean plain potato chips. I said, no, when someone says chips, it means it's on the chip aisle. It might be peanuts, popcorn, pretzels, Funyuns, Pringles, Cheetos. Pepsi is on the chip aisle. You should know this. If it's on the chip aisle, it's a chip. Again, I really don't think we're having a real conversation. Walk a few more steps. Next thing I know, he starts cussing me out. I would say what he said, but I signed that paper to say they can play this on the radio and they got the FCC and all that. So I don't want to be bleeping out stuff. But anyway, he curses me out. He was 6'6", so he was flailing and cursing me out. It was this really big scene. And after he curses me out, he stumps off down the street, leaves me. And it's like dark outside. I'm walking. And of course, all these people are around looking around like, oh my God, who is? And I looked around too like, who was that? Who was? Did you see that guy? Who was he with? Gosh, what happened with him? What's happening? Who was that? Wow. Weird. So as I'm walking a couple more blocks to my car, I said a little silent prayer, and I said, well, baby Jesus, that was dramatic, but thank you for a way out. Because remember, that means we just broke up. We just broke up at the Magic City Classic. So I walk a few more blocks to my car. I know I'll never see this person again. I'm so relieved. And then I get to my car, and he's standing at the passenger side of my car. And I had never been in a situation like this before, you know? I don't know how to handle somebody who's acting like this. So I get in my car, I crank up the car, I don't unlock his door, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, what would Jesus do? I don't know. So I sit there for a minute, and then I unlock the door, and he gets in the car. And he's still just kind of huffing and puffing, and I say, I'm sorry. Were we talking about chips? And he's just screaming, just take me home. Just take me. And I said, I can't move the car. I don't know what's wrong with you. I can't drive with you acting like this. Are you drunk? Did you get stung by a bee? Like, what's going on right now? And he said, you don't always have to be right. Just let me be wrong. And I said, oh, this is about your childhood. Okay. Okay. This isn't even about me or these Doritos right now. So anyway, I told him I couldn't move the car. He gets out the car like I guess he's going to walk home now. I don't know. So he's walking off, and then I remembered, oh, wait. And I opened the door, and I said, hey, let me get my phone, because I told y'all he didn't have a phone, and I let him borrow one of my phones. Again, don't judge me. This is about him. I had two phones. Okay, and so he takes my phone, and he throws it at me. But he throws like a girl, so it hit the ground. Okay. So I pick up the phone, I get in the car, and I kind of collect myself, and I'm watching him walk away. And if you ever seen like a nature film or something with like a baboon, and you know the baboon is walking, and all you see is just like the pink on this baboon. I just saw his, he was just showing his. And as he walked off, I thought, well, that's another relationship gone, another story I have to tell about how it didn't work out. But all I really, really was thinking was, please don't let him go back and get that bread. Thank you. Scrub is a guy that Jesus Ryan is, also known as a buster. Always talking about what he wants and just sits on his broke ass soul.
Eunice Elliott is a motivational speaker, stand-up comedian, and the morning co-anchor on WVTM NBC 13 right here in Birmingham. You can learn more about her at her website, euniceworld.com.
As Eunice's story illustrates, we can't always protect people from themselves. Sometimes the best we can do is to just walk away. Other times, though, we can stick around for our own amusement. And that is exactly what our next storyteller does. A late-night phone call about a break-in at his business doesn't lead to panic, but rather chaos and hilarity. That's coming up in a minute. This is ARC Stories Radio, Birmingham's own true stories.
This is ARC Stories Radio. Every month, we bring you true, personal stories told live in front of an audience, and they're all told by the people who live with it. I'm ARC Stories Director, Taylor Robinson.
And I'm Story Coach, Chris Kinsley. If you've ever received bad news, your response can range from absolute panic to pure wonder. And in this next story, the response begins with simple puzzlement, but then transitions to something much more enjoyable as the news that our teller has delivered becomes stranger by the minute until it finally morphs into something truly bizarre and utterly hilarious. From an event we hosted just last month where our theme was On the Clock, Stories from the Workplace, here's storyteller Van Sykes.
Several years ago, I was awakened in the early morning hours by my cell phone ringing. So I made a quick decision that I would just let that go to voicemail. And as soon as it quit ringing, my home phone starts ringing. Well, that's never a good development, as we all know, especially in my little world, because, see, what that probably means is there's something going on down at Bob Sykes Barbecue in Bessemer, Alabama, where my life has been so firmly attached. So I answer the phone, and sure enough, it's the early morning pit guy, Alfonso. I said, Fonzo, what's going on? He said, well, you might want to turn on your TV. Okay. Why would I want to turn on the TV? He said, well, it's probably just best if you see it on the TV yourself. I said, all right, I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to call you back. I go into the den. I find the remote. I turn the power on. I'm surfing looking for Fox 6. As I turned on the TV, I caught just enough of the video to see a very large man coming down off of the roof ladder from Bob Sykes. He comes off the ladder, he goes down to the bottom, he takes two steps, puts his hands behind his back, he's handcuffed like by two police officers, and he starts making this slow walk toward a van, wearing absolutely nothing but his underwear and coated in grease. As he's walking along, he kind of looks like a big Gumby with underwear. So I immediately called Alfonso back. I said, Alfonso, who in the hell is this? He said, well, he was trying to break in. Okay, he was trying to break in his underwear? No. No, he wasn't. He had a plan. His plan was to tie the hose pipe onto the roof of the building, slide down the chimney, get whatever he wanted, pull himself back out. I said, well, looking at the news story, I'm taking it things didn't turn out too well. He said, no, they didn't. He got about halfway down, and he got stuck. And I said, well, at what point did he have the brilliant idea to slide down in his underwear? He said, oh, no, that's not it. When he got in the chimney, he was fully clothed. Now, folks, some things you've just got to see for yourself in person. So I knew I was in store for an early morning road trip to Bob Sykes. I blast down to Bob Sykes to see what's going on. As I approach the parking lot, I'm amazed at what I see. Because what I see is a hodgepodge of emergency vehicles everywhere. They're parked this way, that way. It's like they all drove up, threw it in park, and ran in the building. The place is packed, okay? So I go in, I make my way through, and I find the police captain. I said, Captain, could you please, what in the world is going on here? He said, Van, I'm so glad you're here. We have just restored your videotape from in the store, and we're just about to watch it. Let's grab a cup of coffee and do that. I said, absolutely. Now, at this point, I need to explain to you how taping systems work. You may or may not know that they don't tape anything until motion begins. And so we're all sitting there with our coffee watching the screen, and the first thing that appears about 2:30 in the morning, once again, is the very large man that I'd seen on the video from the house. This man would have totally filled up a pair of size 48 trousers. As the video comes on, he's riding around behind the building on a children's bicycle, complete with the little frilly things that come out of the end of the handlebars. And he's going in circles, and he looks like one of them damn bears at the circus riding a tricycle. All of a sudden, he stops, and he looks up at the back of the building, and you can clearly see that he's had an epiphany. So he rides out of the picture. The picture goes blank. He returns a short time later. He's walking toward the service ladder on the roof with a hose pipe on his shoulder. Plan hatched. Well, the next thing you see is right before dawn that morning, the lights come on in the dining room, and Alfonso appears as he's briskly making his way across the dining room, headed for the time clock, because as usual, he's probably late. And he gets about halfway across the dining room, and he stops. And on the tape, you can clearly see he's startled. And so he begins to sort of listen, and he's kind of being guided by his ear. And you can tell he's plainly following sound. Well, he takes two or three more steps, he stops, and all of a sudden, he does a 180 and goes back out the door. Screen goes black, no motion. A few minutes later, Alfonso reappears. This time, he's got the morning maintenance man, Mr. Phil, in tow. He and Mr. Phil, of course, proceed across the dining room. Mr. Phil has flashlight in hand. And once again, you can tell by their body language on the tape that they're being driven by sound. And they're creeping across the dining room, and they start to realize that this sound is coming from the chimney. So they go closer, and they go closer to the pit, and they realize that it's not a sound, it's actually a voice. And as they get closer, Mr. Phil shines his light up into the pit, and sure enough, there's a pair of very large, very greasy Nikes hanging down doing one of these. All of a sudden, this voice that was muffled becomes clear, and it's really spooky because the voice is calling Alfonso by name.
Alfonso! Alfonso! Alfonso!
He quickly realizes this is his cousin Jason. He says, "Jason, what are you doing, man?" He said, "Well, I was trying to break in and I got stuck. Call the police. Call 911. Call the fire department. Call somebody. I've been in here for 4.5 hours and I got to get out." So he dutifully goes to the phone, calls the local Vesper Police Department, and reports his findings. A very short time later, the first officer arrives on scene. You can tell by the videotape that Alfonso and Mr. Phil are kind of explaining what's going on with the chimney. He's got a very curious look on his face. He walks to the chimney, whips out his flashlight, shines it in the chimney. He sees these shoes kicking, and the first thing he does is he grabs his police radio, and he says, 208, you got to get over here to see this. This might be the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. Well, the police radio, every emergency frequency on that side of the county is now consumed with cousin Jason. And so, quickly, they realize that they got a man in a chimney. This is a serious situation. Now, Alfonso explains, "This is my cousin Jason that's up in the chimney." Now, cousin Jason is not exactly a newbie to the criminal justice system. Oh, no. He's had many capers throughout his short but illustrious career. However, this one may be the best one at all. So after they have a little levity with Cuz, they decide, you know what, this is a serious situation. We've got a man hung in a barbecue pit chimney. We've got to get him out. So the first plan is this. We're going to take one of our firemen, who obviously has very long arms, and he's going to climb onto a ladder on the pit, and he's going to reach up and grab cousin Jason. And let's remember, cousin Jason is an extremely girthy individual. So as the fireman is getting a good hold around him, and he starts to pull, and they figure, we'll just pull him down. So they pull, and they pull. He pulled a little bit more, and in one failed swoop, he pulls off cousin Jason's pants, socks, and shoes. Now, remember, this man's very lubricated. So the next idea is, let's go to the roof, okay? Now, remember, cousin Jason is stuck in this position. That's the chimney position. Ask Santa Claus. So they go to the top. Somehow or another, a fireman is down there, and he locks himself around cousin Jason's chest, and he starts to pull, and he pulls, and he pulls, and he pulls, and he succeeded in pulling his shirt off. Things have gone from bad to worse. Poor cousin Jason is now stuck in the barbecue pit chimney in nothing but his underwear. He's kind of slow cooking. About 120 degrees. Well, this is a serious situation. The first responders go into a serious mode. They quickly realize this has all been caused by the fire suppression system door, which upon experiencing the great pressure, cousin Jason's thighs coming down the chimney, has activated the door and it's closed and he cannot go up or down. One of the first responders quickly finds the cord, the cable, that holds the door. He pulls the cable, pulls it, pinches it off with a pair of ice grips, creating just about this much room for Cousin Jason. Another fireman gets on the bottom, and they push, and they push. And one of them gets up top, and they pull, and they push. And finally, Cousin Jason pops out of the chimney. Kind of like a well-done Pop-Tart out of a toaster. So here he is now. It's 6:30 in the morning. He's on the roof of Bob Sykes' barbecue in his underwear, and he's somewhere between medium rare and done, okay? Now he's realizing, I got to go down to the other end of the roof. He walks down the other end of the roof, and he realizes this same aluminum ladder that he had ascended several hours ago, he will now have to descend in nothing but his underwear, completely coated in grease. Imagine yourself in your underwear, coated in, let's say, Vaseline, and you got to climb down the aluminum ladder. Well, he pulls it off. He gets to the bottom, and just when he thinks my day can get no worse, he turns around to get handcuffed and realizes that he is being broadcast across the metropolis of Birmingham, Alabama, breaking news, live and local, developing. What a bad day. And I can assure you that Cousin Jason, being a regular over the jailhouse, that by the time he got over there, his arrival had been greatly anticipated, shall we say. So, the other thing, of course, that Cousin Jason accomplished with this incredible feat was the fact that he sustained 3 entire days of the news cycle. 3 24-hour cycles. Day number 1, Birmingham News front page, me and Alfonso, holding up a pair of extremely large, yet greasy, pair of breeches, size 48 and a half. I don't know why you need a half after 48, but apparently you do. Day number 2, second news cycle, front page, Birmingham News, story about the story. In fact, that morning, Fox 6 created a little nugget of gold for the entire media. You see, that morning, as we all know they do, they're running this story every 15 minutes. Poor Cousin Jason is nonstop. He's quickly becoming a local legend. By noon, not to be left out, NBC 13, ABC 3340, CBS 42, they've all picked it up. They're all running with it. He is quickly becoming a local legend. In fact, that night on the evening news, at this point, this story had been picked up out of the news pool, and 28 to 30 affiliates of Fox, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News, and CNN were running this story the entire evening. Cousin Jason's famous Gumby walk was now going coast to coast. So, later that evening, he makes the Bill O'Reilly Show, the most ridiculous item of the day, followed by Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, followed by the then popular Dumbest Criminal Show, followed by probably about a day and a half of Rick and Bubba. Day 3 of the news cycle. Birmingham News, front page. Cousin Jason has made it again. Only this time, it's a picture of the street sign in front of Bob Sykes. And the camera has focused down on about a quarter-page picture of the marquee sign in which I had scribed the following words. Drop on in, but please use the door. Thank you.
Ben Sykes is the owner and pitmaster of Bob Sykes Barbecue in Bessemer. You can find out more at bobsykes.com.
The first time I heard that story, it was a recording that Van had sent to me in an email, and I listened to it. And what's wonderful about Van and that story is that it is the perfect example of how powerful Southern storytelling really is. And that's why we started ARC Stories, to give people like Van a place to come and do possibly the thing that they are the best at in the world, and it's just tell a great story.
And what I love about gathering together to share those stories is how easily it brings people together. In fact, that's what happens in this next story. A shared narrative actually unites two unlikely people who've been out of touch for years. That's coming up next on ARC Stories Radio, Birmingham's own true stories. Thanks for joining us for ARC Stories Radio, Birmingham's true stories told by the people who lived them and recorded in front of a live audience. I'm story coach Chris Kinsley.
And I'm ARC Stories director Taylor Robinson. Whenever we think of people who have made a lasting impression on our lives, many of us think of a teacher. But in our next story, this teacher's influence doesn't even take root until well after the storyteller has left her classroom. It was recorded last year at the Avon Theater, where our theme was Back to School, Stories from Around the Classroom. Here's storyteller Max Rykloff.
In the sixth grade, I made the very adult decision, life choice, to become a professional football player. And like any good professional football player will tell you, it takes an incredible amount of time and effort and dedication. So starting in the sixth grade, as I made this life decision, I spent all of my free time daydreaming about being drafted first by the Dallas Cowboys and playing catch with my friends. And it left me precious little time to do anything as trivial as schoolwork. So I fell behind in my studies, but I got really great at pretending to be a professional football player in my mind. Anyway, one day after a nice little session playing catch with my friends or daydreaming, I go out to a family friend's house with my family. We're having dinner. I'm daydreaming, and I get this nagging feeling that I'm supposed to do something. And I've already played catch for like 2 hours. That wasn't it. I wasn't thinking about what kind of uniforms I was going to wear. And it hit me that I was still in school. I hadn't been drafted yet. And then I had an assignment due the next day. The assignment that I had to do was the dreaded book report. I was assigned, for some reason, the book James and the Giant Peach. I hadn't read a damn word of it yet. It had nothing to do with professional football, so I wasn't interested at the time in the least. Fortunately, the house that I was at had a computer and a word processor at the time. And fortunately for me as well, I had seen the James and the Giant Peach movie several years before. So I figured, since they have the same title, I'd imagine the plot is somewhat similar, so I can go off of that. So I excuse myself from the dinner table, and I go to the computer and start trying to remember anything I could about the James and the Giant Peach movie. There was like a evil stepmom, sister, or something like that, some like a animated worms. There was like a big old peach and like this really, really nice like intro theme music to it. Credits were like went on for a really long time afterwards. So like I had the basis of the book report, and I probably filled in some like details of like what a normal plot would be like. Like there was the main characters were introduced in the beginning, and then something like bad happened to them toward the middle, and all of a sudden, like the soundtrack got louder and louder and more dramatic, and then they figured out like their life mission or whatever, and everyone went home happy. That's basically what I wrote, and I tried to make the heading on the first page as long as possible, like Miss GH's class, fourth period, Max Rykloff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It took about a third of a page, so I was well on my way to getting like a C at least on the book report. So I was pretty happy with myself and submitted it and went back to my career of being an aspiring professional football player. Anyway, a couple days or however long it took her to grade it passed, I got better at my craft. and go to school, and I'm giving back this book report with a big, fat, juicy zero. Like an Atlanta Falcon zero, right on the front page of that book report, and a note that said, "Cheating, see me." And I didn't know what the heck she was talking about. With cheating, like, I had been practicing, like, all the plays the way they're supposed to be done. In my mind, we had 11 men on the field. We played by the rule book. Everything was fine. She said, "See me," but I remember she actually approached me. She didn't even wait for me to come to her. And I had never seen somebody so disappointed in me before. Perhaps they had, then I just, like, blocked it out of my mind. But she had clearly known the difference. She was an employed, professional sixth-grade English teacher. She had seen both the movie version of James and the Giant Peach and actually read the book James and the Giant Peach. And perhaps it was because I mentioned the soundtrack or the animation. She knew. She knew that I had tried to trick her. I tried to outsmart her. Another one of these jocks who thinks that everything is just going to be given to them. So I get the zero. That dropped my grade average down, and I knew that if I was to become, to realize my potential to become a professional football player, I would have to become academically eligible, you know, to play in high school and college. So I started studying more, got better grades. I got such good grades, in fact, that I went to a nice private high school that didn't even have a football team. So I overcompensated. And I also learned how to cheat better, how to cheat more subtly, and how to cheat without getting caught. I developed my favorite technique was to get a package of bubblegum with the 5 sticks of bubblegum, unwrap each stick individually, write test answers on them, wrap them back, and then during a test, take out each stick, look at the answers, and then discard the wrapper. No one ever found that. I highly recommend this particular method of cheating. If you want to get ahead in life and become a professional football player like I am now, we'll get to that later. Anyway, I go to this high school, didn't have a football team. My dreams are crushed, basically. But I don't get caught cheating ever again, actually. And I go to a college afterwards, and despite my troubled past, I managed to make friends with some people. And one of these friends was involved in a class where the students are given a year to make a short documentary film about a social justice issue in Alabama. One of my friends made a film about an intentional community in the woods in North Alabama. An intentional community is basically just a group of people living together with intention. They make decisions together. They don't necessarily live under any kind of a religious, spiritual guideline or framework, but they're committed to living together sustainably, you know, planting vegetables or whatnot, I don't know. So my friend made a short documentary film about a process of deliberation that the community members had, I think, building a road through their community. It's called Common Ground in Royal Alabama in Blount County. And the day that these the films premiere, all the student films at this beautiful place called the Bama Theater in Tuscaloosa. I went to school at the University of Alabama. Anyway, I get to the theater with my friends, my homeboys, my homegirls, and I see in the theater maybe like 10, 15 rows in front of me a very familiar face from my childhood, a very impressive figure from my childhood. And I think, could that be the very same? Is that Miss G.H.? Is that the lady who ruined my dreams of becoming a professional football player by forcing me to rethink all my habits of studying and making me go to a nice high school that didn't have a football team? No, probably not. But lo and behold, the movie came up and her name was right there under her face in the film, and it was indeed Deborah Gordon Hellman. And I thought, gosh, after this movie, I'm going to go right up to her, and I'm going to tell her what I think. She has just ruined my dreams. After the film, I see her and my friend who made the film talking to her, so I go up. I have a natural way of introducing myself to her. Oh, hi, Deborah Gordon Hellman. You think you're so great. You figured out how to live intentionally, but do you remember how you ruined my life? That was the way I thought it was going to happen in my head, but it turned out to be a very polite conversation. And as it turned out, some of my housemates had been going up to this community, to Common Ground, to just to hang out and see what it was like. And they didn't tell me, because nobody tells me anything. They didn't invite me, but eventually they invited me up there to Common Ground, and I was pretty blown away by the life that Miss GH, my sixth grade English teacher, was living there, had been living there for the last couple decades, and she had been commuting from Blount County to Birmingham to teach brats like me in Birmingham how to do book reports unsuccessfully, I might add. One day, some of my friends, the friends who had been going to visit up there, decided to have some sort of fun event, a talent show. And we had done these throughout high school and college. And I spent as much time preparing for this talent show at Common Ground as I had in the sixth grade for becoming a professional football player. I mean, I really put my whole heart and soul into it. And we do this show, and I have so much fun. I'm seeing it. I've prepared all these jokes, and everyone having such a good time. And Miss GH and I bonded on that trip, on that visit to Common Ground through that talent show, just all the fun and hoopla of it. So a couple years pass after that. I move away to California, come back, and I get involved with this great nonprofit here called the Desert Island Supply Company. They do creative writing after school programs in the Woodlawn community. And they're having this fundraiser. It's a 36-hour out loud readathon. People are signing up just like a walkathon to read out loud from books. And the theme of this readathon was banned books, books that had been banned by a school district or a country, by some organization, institution, or another. The list of books included on that have been banned was absurd. Books like Where's Waldo was banned. The Giving Tree was banned. And of course, Fahrenheit 451 and James and the Gosh Darn Giant Peach was on that list. So I think I was picking up on something in sixth grade. I didn't want to read that filth that Miss GH had assigned to me. I don't know, her mind was in the gutter, but I was an upstanding professional football player. I was a role model to the youth of America. The way you signed up for this, the readathon, you were wrote in your availability for whatever time you could read, and I somehow, through the miracle of fortune or fate, I was assigned to read James and the Giant Peach for 15 minutes. So my time comes up, and I'm so excited. Like, I'm finally going to get to read this book and redeem myself, because I developed a relationship with her over the last couple years, so I was excited to tell her. So I read 15 minutes out loud. I don't think I was paying attention, because I was just looking forward to telling her about it. But it was the first time that I had read from the book. I didn't do it in the I didn't read a word of it before. I had finally read it. Well, not read it. I probably read like three paragraphs of it. And immediately after I was finished, I texted her. I said, Miss GH, guess what I did? Maybe you can bump that up to like a B- now. And she responded almost instantly, "You are absolved of all of your sins." And I just felt so relieved and happy and excited. And over the next about 2 years, I started putting on events in Birmingham in the same vein that the talent show was in Common Ground. And Deborah Gordon Hellman, Miss GH, would come to almost every single one of them. And so what I learned from this whole experience is that sometimes your school teachers will crush one of your dreams and support another one of your dreams that perhaps you are more suited to realize. And she is sitting right over there, Deborah Gordon Hellman. Thank you.
Love never comes just when you think it will.
Love is the way we feel for you.
We're family.
We're family.
Family. Max Rykov creates and hosts game shows and is also an MC, moderator, talk show host, and producer. Learn more about him at maxrykov.com.
Like Max, we all have stories from our past to share with others, even ones that continue to impact us today. That's what our live events are all about. And we'd love to have you join us to hear more stories from right here in Birmingham. Our next event is actually this Saturday, May 28th, at the Avon Theater in Birmingham's Lakeview District. Our theme will be POV, Stories About Change in Perspective. Tickets are available now, and you can get details on our website at arcstories.com.
Thanks for listening to ARC Stories Radio. This program is produced in partnership with WBHM. We especially need to thank Michael Crowell, Program Director at WBHM, as well as Audrey Atkins, Marketing Manager, Will Dahlberg, Membership Manager, and Rachel Lindley, News Director. The General Manager for WBHM is Scott Hanley. Recording and mastering was by Eric Chapman from Symmetric Sound. Up Air Creative does all of our design, and Territory 3 provides our website. Special thanks to Senia Etheridge, Aaron Moon, Nate Dreger, Jake Brantley, and Casey Sharp for making this episode possible. If you like today's stories, please subscribe to our podcast. You can find it on iTunes, SoundCloud, or our website, arcstories.com. There you can listen to other stories, stay up to date with all of our events, and you can even submit your own story to tell. After all, we are always asking, what's your story?